wanting to report on the story and things like that, just to shed light on police brutality cases. And so when it came to me, the first my first initial thought was like, well, here it is, a young kid, because I too have a 20-something-year-old. My son is 23. And so Donnie's not that much older than my son. So I was like, well, you're coming here to do, quote-unquote, a documentary about my brother, but you weren't even born, you know? You weren't even born in 1990, so what could you possibly report about it? And so we met a few times out in the community. He was just—he just took time, and that kind of made me feel like, okay, well, maybe he has good intentions. Maybe he has something in him that he really is compelled to the story and wants to get the truth out. So when I started meeting with him more, I said, okay, well, this is like maybe the spawn or like a new beginning, if you will, to exposing the truth finally after all this time.
I wanted to ask Mrs. Pinnell Dantzler, you have Gary Spath, who was acquitted of manslaughter. You, in a civil suit, got $200,000. Gary Spath got $40,000 every year for the rest of his life, which comes out, what, over $1 million. I was wondering your response to this, and if you want this case reopened, the feds coming in perhaps and investigating your son's civil rights being violated, not to mention his death.
Yes, because when this happened, I was shocked that they got him off with nothing at all. So I was distraught. And so I feel that if anyone get punished, I don't care, like I said, how many years it takes for the truth to come through, they should they should take them and what they did wrong, and they should be punished just like anyone else. 'Cause I work in New Jersey. We pay his tax. So I'm paying his tax for killing my son. That's terrible. We paying his tax for killing my son, shot him in the back. Back in the days, I thought that was murder when you shoot a person in the back with their hands up. He surrendered. He surrendered. But he said he was reaching for a gun. And I carried this for 32 years. How could he say that he carried this all this time? It was a good shoot. How was a good shoot? How could he say things like that? And he got children, then raised them, and he got grandchildren.
Mrs. Thelma Pinnell Dantzler and Natasha Pinnell, we're going to continue this conversation and post online at democracynow.org. And Donnie Gofstein, thanks so much for being with us. The series is called Model America on MSNBC. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
KBOO News is proud to present our 2022 Citizens Agenda Survey, and we want to hear your thoughts as we approach the midterm election. What do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Let us know, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card as a thank you. Plus, it will help our volunteer reporters cover the election with the info that you need to know. Find the survey online at bit.ly/KBOO-survey. That's KBOO's 2022 Citizens Agenda Survey, available online through September 25th at bit.ly/KBOO-survey.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon gubernatorial candidates weigh in on capital punishment in the state. Federal Reserve says fighting inflation may actually cause a recession. And, in international news, a United States commission finds evidence of Russian war crimes in Ukraine. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 23rd, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Oregon has had a moratorium on capital punishment for more than 10 years. Our next governor has the power to decide whether to maintain the moratorium or revoke it. Oregon Public Radio recently asked our three gubernatorial candidates how they would handle the situation. All responded in writing. Christine Drazen, the Republican candidate for governor, said she would lift the moratorium but not approve every execution. She stated she is personally opposed to the death penalty, but wants to follow the will of Oregon voters who approved the constitutional amendment allowing capital punishment. Tina Kotek, running as a Democrat, says she would keep the moratorium in place. She noted Oregon has not followed through on the death penalty in over 25 years. She added she is personally opposed to the death penalty because of her religious beliefs. Former Democratic State Senator Betsy Johnson, who is running as an unaffiliated candidate, said she would allow the state to carry out executions. She also noted Oregonian voters have twice affirmed having a death penalty. Recent changes by the legislature and rulings by the Oregon Supreme Court have resulted in fewer people in Oregon's death row. Since 2019, the number of people sentenced to die in Oregon declined from 28 to 20, according to the Oregon Department of Corrections. According to Jeff Ellis, director of the Oregon Capital Resource Center, the actual number is much lower. Ellis believes the real number of cases where the death penalty is still a possibility is closer to 2 or 3. Ellis believes the Oregon Department of Justice has conceded the rest are no longer death-eligible cases. The United States Supreme Court reinstated the death penalty in 1976. Voters in Oregon approved a constitutional amendment adopting capital punishment in 1984. Since then, two people in the state have actually been put to death. Former Governor John Kitzhaber, a physician, presided over both of these executions. During his second term, he refused to see a third execution scheduled for December of 2011. That action started the moratorium, which Kate Brown has since upheld. In 2019, Oregon lawmakers voted to narrow the types of offenses that constitute aggravated murder, the only charge that carries a death sentence. The death penalty could only have been applied to people convicted of murdering a law enforcement officer, those who carried out a terrorist attack that killed at least two people, people murdering a child younger than 14, or those who killed someone in prison while serving time for a murder conviction. Kotek voted for Senate Bill 1013, the legislation tightening the definition of who could be sentenced to die. Johnson and Drazen voted against it. Even if the moratorium were lifted, executions would not resume immediately. Portland City Council candidate Renee Gonzalez is facing fines upwards of $77,000 for failure to report a significant discount granted to her for her downtown Portland campaign office space. The city's small donor elections program says the Gonzalez campaign paid $250 per month for an office space at market retail values at just under $7,000. Program director Susan Mottet wrote that a 96% discount on rent is an illegal campaign contribution that violates campaign finance laws and would not be available to the general public. Gonzalez is running against incumbent commissioner Joanne Hardesty. The office space located at 1010 Southwest 11th Avenue became available May 1st and is owned and operated by Schnitzer Properties Management. Jordan Schnitzer, a real estate developer, donated $250 to the Gonzalez campaign, the maximum amount an individual can make based on campaign finance regulations, on May 2nd, the day after the downtown office space became available. Portland election officials are fining Gonzalez $33,250 for accepting the space and $10,640 for not reporting it. She is additionally ordered to reimburse Schnitzer Properties Management $33,250. Gonzalez campaign spokespeople denouncing the fines are saying they accepted the low rent due to current conditions plaguing downtown, also saying they paid over $500 per month in utilities. The campaign has until October 4th to appeal the penalties and has brought in a compliance team to review the complaint brought against Gonzalez. The Federal Reserve delivered a message of what it will take to curb high inflation rates, slower economic growth, higher unemployment, and potentially a recession. Chair Jerome Powell said the Fed's goal of engineering a so-called soft landing, that is, managing to slow growth enough to curb inflation without causing a recession, looks increasingly unlikely. The Fed has been steadily raising borrowing costs to slow the worst streak of inflation in four decades. Powell said, quote, "No one knows whether this process will lead to a recession, or, if so, how significant that recession would be," end quote. He does not plan to slow the rate hikes until we see continued slow growth, a modest increase in unemployment, and clear evidence that inflation is moving back down to a 2% target. Falling gas prices have slightly lowered inflation, which rose 8.3% in August compared with a year earlier. The Fed earlier this week also forecasted major hikes to come, possibly raising their benchmark rate to roughly 4.4% by the end of the year, a full point higher than they had predicted as recently as June. And they expect to raise the rate again next year to about 4.6%. That would be the highest level since 2007. Raising borrowing rates makes it costlier to take out mortgages or auto and business loans. Theoretically, consumers and businesses then presumably borrow and spend less, cooling the economy and slowing inflation. In their recent quarterly economic forecasts, the Fed projected that economic growth will stay weak for the next few years, with unemployment rising to 4.4% by the end of 2023, up from its current level of 3.7%. A recession has always followed any time unemployment has risen by a half point over several months. Officials also foresee the economy expanding just 0.2% this year, sharply lower than their forecast of 1.7% growth from 3 months ago. Last week, the average fixed mortgage rate topped 6%, its highest point in 14 years. This led to sharp drops in rates of home sales. Some economists are expressing concern that the Fed's rapid rate hikes, the fastest since the early 1980s, will cause more economic damage than necessary. Americans are actually expecting inflation to ease significantly over the next 5 years. The Fed's rapid rate hikes mirror steps that other major central banks are taking, contributing to concerns about a potential global recession. Powell said, quote, "We have got to get inflation behind us. I wish there were a painless way to do that. There isn't," end quote. Oil and gas companies claim methane capture is difficult and costly, but it's vital to help with climate change. Now, a report from the International Energy Agency says companies could cut emissions by about half at no cost to them. Suzanne Potter tells us more.
A relatively small number of so-called super emitters are responsible for 40% of the methane emissions in oil and gas hotspots like California's Central Valley, according to a new report. Experts from Carbon Mappers, the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, and two universities in Arizona flew over the basin and measured the invisible gas with spectrometers. John Goldstein with the Environmental Defense Fund, a group that co-authored the report, says the health of the planet depends on reducing methane emissions.
Methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas, more than 80 times more powerful than carbon dioxide in the first 20 years after it's emitted. So getting these problems fixed, keeping this methane in the pipe and out of our air, is a really important way to bend the curve on climate change.
The EPA is working on national regulations to require methane capture. Emissions from animal feedlots also play a role. The report found California has fewer super emitters compared to other states that have weaker methane capture rules. Goldstein notes that technology exists to find and fix pipeline leaks or to capture excess gas instead of burning it off.
It's a waste of resources. It's a big source of pollution that's leading to unhealthy air quality. It definitely is something that the oil and gas industry ought to be addressing.
Oil and gas companies have long complained that methane capture is time-consuming and expensive. However, a report from the International Energy Agency found that the industry could cut 45% of its methane emissions at no net cost to them. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The UN continues to condemn Russian aggression in Ukraine. With more on the story, that's Catherine Carley with 2022 Talks.
This is 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
The very international order that we have gathered here to uphold is being shredded before our eyes. We cannot, we will not allow President Putin to get away with it.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called on members of the U.N. Security Council Thursday to send a clear message to Russia that its reckless nuclear threats against Ukraine must stop. Blinken also detailed what he called the mounting evidence of war crimes by Russian forces in Ukraine.
The laws that we have passed with the infrastructure bill and the rescue package and all the rest will serve to enable the training that is necessary for the rebuilding.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said federal funding will help train workers to rebuild Puerto Rico's infrastructure damaged by Hurricane Fiona, which struck the island Sunday. The power grid, which was never fully rebuilt following Hurricane Maria in 2017, is still down in many parts of the island. Hundreds of thousands of residents remain without electricity or water service. The CEOs of America's largest banks appeared before the Senate Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee, where Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown detailed their record profits and widespread consumer abuses.
With those profits and with the taxpayer support you get, come a responsibility to serve your customers in the larger economy. I think you know you don't always hold up your end of the bargain.
Brown noted the bank's promotion of their popular money transfer app, Zelle, and their failure to help customers whose money was stolen in fraudulent transactions. Brown said he expects banks to eliminate overdraft and other fees, much like the Federal Reserve waived overdraft fees for banks during the COVID pandemic. Senator Mazie Hirono spoke of the need for campaign finance reform.
Too many elected officials are no longer answering to the people, but instead to the secret donors and corporations who are funding their campaigns.
Still, Senate Republicans managed to block a bill requiring political groups disclose donors who give $10,000 or more. Donations through so-called dark money groups have increased dramatically since the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision in 2010. The Inspector General for the Labor Department reports more than $45 billion was stolen from the nation's unemployment insurance program set up during the pandemic. Criminals use the Social Security numbers of dead people and people serving federal prison terms to file false jobless claims. And finally, the Treasury and State Departments announced new sanctions on several Iranian security organizations following the arrest and death of a 22-year-old woman accused of violating Iran's strict dress code for women. For Public News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, an in-depth report behind the headlines. At 6, it's Youth Speaks Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will feature clear skies with a low of 47. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly sunny with a high of 71. Today in history, in 1973, an Argentine general election returned Juan Perón, husband of Eva Duarte, or Evita, to presidential power 21 years after her death. The quote of the day is from American singer and songwriter Ray Charles, born this day in 1930. Charles said, "Dreams, if they're any good, are always a little bit crazy." United Nations-appointed panel of independent legal experts concluded today that Russia has committed war crimes in the Ukrainian conflict. A three-person commission set up in April to investigate the conduct of hostilities in four areas of Ukraine made an 11-minute statement to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. The commission found that some Russian troops had committed sexual and gender-based violence, with the victims ranging in age from 4 years old to 82. The report added more chilling allegations to a list of crimes previously reported by Ukrainian and international investigators. A mass burial site was found near the town of Izium after it was recaptured by Ukrainian troops this month. The commission has not at this point concluded the violations amount to crimes against humanity. It was also documenting the actions of individual soldiers and had not found any general pattern of sexual violence as a war strategy. The commission's findings were based on visits to 27 towns and settlements and interviews with more than 150 victims and witnesses. Experts inspected sites of destruction, graves, and places of detention and torture. Two cases of ill treatment of Russian soldiers by Ukrainian forces were also documented. Russia was not present to hear the commission's statement or respond to it. Anton Karinovich, Ukraine's ambassador at large, called for the creation of a special tribunal with specific jurisdiction to investigate and prosecute senior Russian leaders. The commission also plans to investigate other alleged violations, such as the destruction of civilian infrastructure and the seizure or destruction of economic resources. It'll be making recommendations on criminal accountability to the UN Human Rights Council. Florida's Don't Say Gay bill is difficult to execute, and it is confusing both educators and students. Tramel Gomez has more on the story.
Despite being aimed at children in kindergarten through third grade, Florida teachers say what's often referred to as Don't Say Gay law has struck fear in teachers and students of all grades. Billed as an effort to give parents more control over the types of instruction allowed in classrooms, the Parental Rights in Education Act prohibits classroom instruction about sexual orientation or gender identity up to third grade. But since it went into effect in July, Erica Hooveress, a high school English teacher, says the law has done nothing but cause stress and confusion for all.
I have had students come to me and say, hey, we've been told that if we ask you to call us different pronouns, you have to tell our parents. And, you know, if you see us in the hall with someone of the same gender, you have to tell our parents. And I tell them, that's never going to happen. You don't have to be concerned about that with me.
Hooveress says in group chats with teachers across the state, they're all concerned. Some tell her they're doing their best to make kids feel more comfortable, while others have gone as far as removing portions of literature they would usually cover and limiting class discussions because they're concerned about getting in trouble. Hooveress says she hasn't seen a single message from district leaders on how to navigate classroom discussions, especially when kids are the ones driving the discussions and asking for explanations, including about the debate around the controversial issue.
The more strident parts that we were hearing have been dialed back a little bit in the actual verbiage of the bill. But there's still that concern there. There's an obvious effort to limit the acceptability of a community of people, which my students do not feel okay with at all.
She adds the law has sent shockwaves that extend far beyond limiting class discussions for younger kids. She says most of her students are either 18 or close to it. And if the topic of gender identity or sexual orientation come up in any literature and her students ask questions, she expects she will continue to answer. This is Tramel Gomes for Florida News Connection.
The pandemic hurt all of us, but really damaged small businesses. Now, the Inflation Reduction Act is helping subsidize Affordable Care Act premiums, helping the businesses get back on their feet. Mike Moen has more on that story.
Average Affordable Care Act premiums in Wisconsin would have been 56% higher this year without temporary subsidies from the federal government. Small business advocates say a new extension is a big help when smaller firms are trying to get back on their financial feet. The Inflation Reduction Act included a provision to extend the ACA's premium subsidies through 2025. The extra tax credits are from an earlier pandemic relief package and were set to run through this year. David Chase, with the Small Business Majority, says the extension removes a lot of headaches during a complicated time for owners of smaller operations.
Only about half of small businesses are able to offer coverage, and we've seen that number, you know, drop even more since the pandemic, which makes the Inflation Reduction Act even more important.
Chase says since it was put in place, the Affordable Care Act has been a game changer for small businesses, but acknowledges owners still face challenges. He says health care costs continue to rise, with one recent analysis noting marketplace insurers were already proposing premium hikes for 2023. Policy experts say the subsidy extension will help buffer those higher expenses. Sean Fedeplace works in the Midwest with the Main Street Alliance and is based in Wisconsin. He says the extension is especially helpful here because Wisconsin still is among the 12 states that have yet to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. He says that adds barriers for small business owners trying to build the staff these days.
A lot of folks go and do jobs that they're working for large corporations purely to get health insurance. You have folks who don't start a business because they need health insurance. You have folks that only are part-time with their business because they need health insurance.
The Inflation Reduction Act also will allow Medicare to negotiate some drug prices. Analysts say that could also help small business owners in the future because skyrocketing prices have made it harder to select a plan to offer to their staff. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
Solar panels can be effectively added to existing noise barriers. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. People driving down Interstate 95 near Lexington, Massachusetts, will soon pass rows of solar panels. A company called CoSolar is working with the Massachusetts Department of Transportation to attach the panels to a short stretch of the existing highway noise barrier. The project is expected to generate enough electricity to power more than 100 homes, and it's intended to demonstrate the effectiveness of adding solar panels to noise barriers. CoSolar's managing partner, Korai Kotan, says the approach helps increase clean energy with minimal land disturbance.
The solution takes advantage of the benefits of solar energy and vast length of current and future noise barrier structures that crisscross urban and rural lands all over the United States.
He says the Highway Administration invests a lot of money in these barriers. Adding solar to them could offset these costs, or even generate funds for local, state, or federal agencies. And it would allow the barriers to help reduce carbon pollution, not just noise pollution.
So it has a lot of benefits, and we hope that we can actually expand this nationwide, maybe worldwide.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Western Alaskan natives have been devastated by a recent storm. With more on that story, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Countless Western Alaskans have lost subsistence resources, food, and even camps that ties them to their land. Residents are devastated and processing what the loss means to them and their families. Various agencies are still assessing the scope of damage from the storm. KNOM's Davis Hovey reports.
Melanie Banke, CEO of Kowarik Inc., shared with KNOM listeners on Wednesday that the damage to subsistence cabins goes beyond loss of buildings.
We've got several people who have lost their subsistence cabins and their boats, and we all know that our subsistence cabins aren't just recreational. They're a means for our food security, but also our cultural continuation, and they connect us to the land and our ancestors.
Banke's point about the cultural connection being affected by the storm has been echoed again and again by Western Alaskans. Darlene Trigg is one of many Nome residents who no longer has a camp for her and her family to enjoy. It was completely washed away by the storm.
My mom and dad took it upon themselves to make sure that all of the kids had subsistence foods, and it all happened there. My earliest memories are in that building, around that land. It's a part of the foundation of who I am. It's built into my identity.
Throughout the Norton Sound region, residents have talked about the impact this storm had on their subsistence lifestyle. Daisy Lockwood Kachiak, the city administrator in Stebbins, told KNOM her community will not have as much food for winter.
100% of the fish racks and fishing supplies for all our subsistence fishermen are gone.
The community is requesting food deliveries from various agencies to help sustain them over the coming days. Alaska's congressional delegation has sent a letter to President Joe Biden urging him to approve Governor Dunleavy's request for a major disaster declaration in western Alaska. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Hovey.
Friday is California Native American Day. This year, the day is the first ever paid holiday for court workers. Native American lawmaker James Ramos successfully introduced a bill in 2021 to allow court personnel to switch Columbus Day for California Native American Day. Ahead of the holiday this week, Ramos talked about the effort and celebrated with bird singers and court officials at the San Bernardino Superior Court, which was streamed online.
We're here standing strong for all of our ancestors and the atrocity that has been inflicted upon them to once and for all have a paid holiday to recognize the contributions and the contributions by the California Indian people to the state of California. And we start with the first paid holiday in the state of California. The whole state, the whole judicial systems, all 58 counties to join together in honoring California's first people.
Judiciary personnel holidays are set in a civil procedure and the change required legislation. Other staff are covered in a government code. The measure amended that to recognize the holiday. It does not create an additional paid holiday, just an exchange. The bill was supported by tribes and Native organizations. On Thursday, members of Washington State's congressional delegation introduced legislation to help the Puyallup tribe place more than 17 acres of land into trust to spur economic development. The tribe seeks to pursue opportunities at the Port of Tacoma and on the Tacoma waterfront. The proposal is supported by the city, county, and the state's governor. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 23rd, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast included Annette Newell. The producer tonight is myself, Josh Salem, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Catherine